We'll be looking over Joshua 2 this evening. Now, we said when we started off in the last class, that chapters 1 through 5 is where the children of Israel are going to be, they're preparing to take the land. And we just looked at chapter 1, and we saw in chapter 1 that God charges Joshua, and Joshua charges the leaders and the nation to cross the Jordan. And we also saw that this included the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh. So now we're here in chapter 2. So again, in this preparation of the taking of the land, Joshua is going to send two men. So there's two spies that are being sent from Shittim that's going to secretly spy out the land in Canaan. And when in Jericho, they end up finding an ally and enter into a covenant with her. And we'll see the reasoning behind this, the reason that she wanted to do this, and that this agreement was conditional. So there was conditions to this agreement. In this chapter, we see three main things going on, so I broke it down into three sections. In verses 1 through 7, we see where Rahab, she hides these two spies. In 8 through 21, we see Rahab's faith and the covenant that she made with these men. And then in verses 22 through 24, the two spies return to Joshua and they report what took place. So in verse 1, it says that, or we see in verse 1, that the spies lodged at Rahab the harlot's house. Okay, so evidently, the way it's described, this seems to be a place where travelers would stay. And somehow, in verse 2, word got to the king of Jericho, that the men from the sons of Israel had come to search out the land. And so we'll see, because of that, what he says in verse 3, but it's to me kind of interesting that how he would know that these men were from the sons of Israel and that they were there to search out the land. But I think verses 9 and following maybe help explain some of that. So we'll get to that in a second. But in verse 3, the king of Jericho asked Rahab to bring the men to him. And she lies about where the two men are. So see what she tells the king. Let's look at verse 4, or 4b. And she said, "Yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they were from. And it came about when it was time to shut the gate at dark that the men went out. I do not know where the men went. Pursue them quickly, for you will overtake them." So we see here that Rahab lies about these two men. She lies to the king. And I put a question on there. What has she actually done with them? So we see that she hid them. So she had hidden these men. We see this in verse 4 and actually verse 6 as well. It says in verse 4, we'll start there, but the woman had taken the two men and hidden them. And then in verse 6 it says, but she had brought them up to the roof and hidden them in the stalks of flax which she had laid in order on the roof. So we see that she hides these two spies. According to verse 9, does Rahab believe in the Lord? Okay. So she believes in the Lord. So let's read verses 9 through 11. And so actually in verse 8, we see that she comes up to the roof to talk to these two men. And then in verse 9 it says, and she said to them, I know that the Lord has given you the land, and that the terror of you has fallen on us, and that all the inhabitants of the land have melted away before you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon and Og, whom you utterly destroyed. And when we heard it, our hearts melted and no courage remained in any man any longer because of you. For the Lord your God, He is God in heaven and above and on earth beneath. So she states her belief, because she's heard of what has taken place. And, you know, she said that I know that the Lord has given you the land and that the terror has fallen on us. So this belief is stated, and that's also because of that is why she's trying to enter into an agreement. So basically she knows what's going to happen. She believes. And in verse 10, it says, you know, like we just saw, for we have heard. So they've heard of what has been going on. They heard of the Exodus, referring to the Exodus, that the Lord dried up the Red Sea and when they came out of Egypt. And they heard what had happened to the two kings. So they heard. And evidently, others heard as well. When we started off in verse 2, we see that word was getting around to the king. So I'm thinking because of where these men were at her place, that maybe others were there and they realized what's maybe happening. So they talked to the king. But out of both of these, would you consider that they somehow come up with the idea that they know who these guys are? And I think it has to do with because of what we read in verse 9. So the things that they've heard that's been going on. So did they just put two and two together? Are they assuming? I mean, because remember, they come in here to spy. So they're not announcing who they are. And I'm guessing that they're somewhat trying to stay low. I don't know if they somehow disguise themselves or what. It doesn't say. But we see, starting off in these first couple of verses, that the people and the king, they pretty much know or have a good idea who this is, who these two guys are, or at least concerned about it, because they too have heard. They've heard of what's going on. So they were in fear. So again, well, I stated, doesn't this describe faith? And we've already said yes. And we see here that it's not just faith. It shows by what she's doing, she's going to act upon this faith. So we see some things that are said in the New Testament about Rahab. We can look over at Hebrews. Hebrews 11:31. It says, "By faith, Rahab the harlot did not perish along with those who were disobedient after she had welcomed the spies in peace." Just looking at some of the wordage, because it states by faith. But then when you look further in the verse, it says after. So this shows some action going on. So after she had welcomed the spies in peace, and the result is she didn't perish. So we see her acting on this faith, and that she was safe in this idea, or safe because of that. She didn't perish like the others that would be perishing because of the judgment that was coming upon them. In James, we can look at James 2:25. In James 2:25, it says, "In the same way, was not Rahab the harlot also justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out by another way?" So we see this action that she did, this action based on her faith and what it resulted in. It resulted in her not being destroyed like the others. So she knows and believes what is about to take place concerning Jericho. Not saying that she knows the details, but from the things that she's heard, and she knows that they're coming to take the land. So because of this, she's trying to have an agreement to protect her and her family. So let's go back to Joshua 2. I still wanted to be in Hebrews, sorry. Back to Hebrews 31. There's a 3:1 in there. So we see that that was just where I was looking at this idea of where it states after. So she acts upon this faith, and that's what saved her. And we can go back to Joshua 2 now, verse 12. Verse 12, it says, "Now therefore," or "because of this, please swear to me by the Lord, since I have dealt kindly with you, that you also will deal kindly with my father's household and give me a pledge of truth." So this pledge of truth, this agreement, this oath. And also we'll look at verse 13. "And spare my father and my mother and my brothers and my sisters with all who belong to them, and deliver our lives from death." And the men respond, and they say to Rahab, they say to her, "Our life for yours if you do not tell this business of ours. And it shall come about when the Lord gives us the land, that we will deal kindly and faithfully with you. So they tell her that she can't let it be known, you know, what their plan is, you know, not to tell of this business of ours. But then, if she can do that, and we'll see some other details that have to be followed as well. But if she can do that, then they will deal kindly and faithfully with her, is what they tell her. So, what were the conditions of the oath? We saw, of course, that she can't say anything, but there was a condition that said that her and her family, they must stay in her room and tie a cord of scarlet thread in the window. We see that in let's start in 17. Said, and the men said to her, we shall be free from this oath to you, which you have made with us swear, unless when we come into the land, you tie this cord of scarlet thread in the window through which you let us down, and gather to yourselves into the house your father and your mother and your brothers and all your father's household. And it shall come about that anyone who goes out of the doors of your house into the street, his blood shall be on his own head, and we shall be free. But anyone who is with you in the house, his blood shall be on our head if a hand is laid on him. So basically they're telling them, you know, if you do this, if you follow the rules that we've said, you stay in your room, you tie this cord on there, and if you don't leave the room, then you will be safe. And, you know, if we will even say that if something happens, then it's on us. So they're stating, you know, that they will be safe if they follow these rules. So that is one of the conditions of this oath. And in verse 20, well, we already read that, so where it says that, again, if you tell this business of ours, then we shall be free from this oath. So it's stating again that, you know, hey, you can't say anything. Don't let anybody know what's going on, or that will free us from this oath. I've just been talking. So go ahead, Keith.
All right, so I'm gonna ask about the elephant in the room. I think it's a question that all comes up when we discuss this, especially the way we're discussing it right now.
Okay.
Rahab we're reading about Rahab, we're praising her for her faith. It reads in Hebrews, she's listed among a lot of other great men of faith. And then we go to James and it talks about how she's justified by her works by sending them out another way. She lies. I mean, we're not saying that she's justified in what she did in lying, correct? I mean, that's not what we're saying here. We're
correct.
Saying that she had great faith, but her means of sending this by that wasn't what it should have been?
Correct. I would not state that, because we already know that lying is not something we should be doing, and God does not approve of that. What He is approving of is her part that she's playing, I guess you could say. She is protecting these guys. She's you know, she's hiding them. Of course, the lying part of it, you know, they didn't, and the parts that I stated too in those two different verses too, they didn't ask her to lie about anything. They just said, hey, don't mention anything. But no, I agree with where you're coming from, because I'm sure, you know, that comes up and people think, well, hey, is God saying it's okay for you to lie? You know, because you have Rahab here, which there's another problem with Rahab too, and that doesn't mean that just because He doesn't approve of her being a harlot. He's not saying that he approves of her because she's lying. It's just the part that she's playing in here. And, you know, she acts out of faith because she's heard what's going on. You know, I keep going back to that part. But that's what I see kind of drawing out. You know, she's heard of what these guys or the sons of Israel, and more than that, their God, you know, the Lord, and what he's done is, because it even states where, when they were brought out of Egypt, the idea that we're familiar with, as he parted the sea, and, you know, they're able to walk on dry land. So this is something that they've even heard about, you know, and they've heard about how they destroyed the two kings. So,
well, in Joshua 9, it does talk about how the, I think it was the Gibeonites, they've heard of the famed God of Israel and what he did in Egypt. You know, so I'm just making sure, I think we understand that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, making sure that it's understood that, especially for somebody who doesn't come to a study like this, or for, you know, for explaining to our kids when this is talking
about. Definitely, yeah.
If they never asked her to lie.
No.
She, it never states that she knew who the spies were when they came in into her. I mean, the spies were the worst kept secret, apparently, because they knew immediately.
Yeah.
You got a million people camped across the Jordan,
yeah.
And you knew that they knew, I mean, if their God is fame, you know,
yeah.
They're the worst kept secret around. Her faith is, you think about that, if she's the only, her and her family are the only people who are saved, her faith is great, considering everything that people do know about. You know, the fact that she was the only one who was making this promise to him, expressing her faith, that's great, but you also don't want to justify what she did, you know, like, okay,
no.
Well, it's okay to lie, and I don't think you're doing that,
no.
I want to bring it up for that purpose, because if you deal with 5 and 7-year-olds, and you explain, oh, no, I mean, yes, she did a good thing by hiding them, but, you know, she didn't need to lie, and if she truly understood, you know, what God, truly understood God, what his purpose and his intent was, she wouldn't have to lie. He would find another way for them to make it.
Right.
He had a purpose in mind. She had maybe not a complete understanding, but
correct.
So it's not justifying the lie. It's not justifying the lie, but it is extolling her faith for all that she did to help him. And so,
yeah.
I just felt like maybe we should.
No, that's a good point that you bring up, because definitely, because yeah, I didn't state any of that in here, but that's a good point, because I'm sure it comes up, especially in the, like you said, when you're teaching the smaller kids and stuff.
Well, it comes up when you're teaching people who look for contradictions in the Bible.
Yeah.
Oh, it's okay to lie here.
No.
Okay to lie. No, there's nothing that says it's okay to lie. She's being sold for the faith that she had.
Right.
The way she went about it, she didn't have a complete faith or understanding of God, but that's faith nonetheless,
right.
So much so that she was willing to, you know, tell the spies and stuff.
Right, because she believed what, she definitely believed what she heard and what he could do. So, I heard somebody. Oh.
Do you think she had faith in God, or do you think she knew enough about God to have the faith that her and her family could be saved? To me, that's two different things.
Let's say it again, then. Let's see. Yeah.
So, by faith, it did. By faith, her and her household were saved.
Yeah.
So, by faith, she had enough faith in knowing who he was, and that he had delivered everything she heard, delivered the Israelites from the Egyptians.
Mm-hmm.
To save her and her house and her family. But I don't know that I equate that as the same as her having faith in God like we have faith in God. She was a harlot.
Right.
She did lie. Even lying for a good reason is still lying. Y'all just talked about that.
Right.
So I don't know that I read that in my interpretation of the reading that she had faith. At that moment, she just had faith that her and her house could be saved if she did what she was told to do.
Right. I'm not stating that when you said that have faith like you and I have faith. Whatever this is that it's talking about, you know, it says that because the scripture even says that she has faith. You know, so this understanding, she knows who this God is. But go ahead, Mark.
You think in the beginning wasn't necessarily faith but fear?
Well, I'm sure there's some fear in there, but fear's nothing wrong with fear being a motivator, though. Yeah, so.
Well, it does say verse 11, He is God in heaven above and on earth beneath. So
right.
We have healthy fear because we know He is the Lord God of all things.
Right.
We have a faith that He is in control of all things. I continue to say complete faith, so the fact that you may have someone today, you may have someone then. You have the faith that God is the spirit of all things. You may not understand everything He wants you to do.
Right.
And so, from that standpoint, I think, Dan, I don't know if I'm answering your question, but my thought process is she was a part of it. She knows that He's the creator of all things. She may not know everything that she needs to do. She may be in that profession in spite of her faith. I don't know. But the fact that she's doing it out of fear, she does say He is the God of heaven and earth. So I think
right.
there's a healthy understanding that He's in control of all things.
Yes.
Faith.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you think that even though she was a part of the dispute, one of four mentioned in the genealogy?
Yes. Yes. Because I did have that on my notes for Matthew 1:5. We'll look at that here in just a second. But that is true. So even though, you know, what we see here about her, that she is part of the genealogy. And I see a hand back there.
I was going to say, it was obviously faith. It wasn't real faith. Why would the Holy Spirit inspire Lazarus like James or in Hebrews?
No, I definitely, it's faith. Just depends on what you know, like what Don was saying, how she's defining it, but there's definitely faith that she believed in this God. And like he said, because she saw what had been done, and, you know, there's some things that she understood about him, that he is the God of heaven and such, and on earth.
I think you could also say that she knew that every single person around her in that city was going to be dead in a matter of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Dead.
Well, that goes back to what Mark was saying. Yeah, the fear.
Not a single person was dying. So her faith led her to do the right thing, to hide the spies. She knew all these other... In the business she was in, she could hear people talk, is what I've heard in the past. She knew that their hearts were melted within them. Hers wasn't. You know, Bible's faith is a faith that is, have you said, back.
Mm-hmm.
She acted on that faith. It was complete trust.
Well, that's putting your neck out there, literally. I mean, that is a big risk. But evidently, she was thinking these other things going on was a bigger risk. Yes, sir.
Faith is one thing, knowledge is another.
Okay.
A person can have a strong faith and have a lot of things that yet need to learn. You baptize a fellow in Christ, you shouldn't baptize him unless he's got a genuine faith in Jesus Christ.
Yes.
And a will to obey and repentance. But he may not know that drinking is wrong. He may not have any problems going somewhere and dancing. There's a lot of things he doesn't know. He may not know that you shouldn't worship God with an instrument. Faith and knowledge are two different things.
Good boy.
First. Secondly, because she is commended for her faith, does not give countenance to the idea that everything she was commended. It would be
right.
The same thing today. We want to talk about patriotism and courage. We may talk about brave soldiers who fought in battle. But we're not committing the fact that when he was out of battle, he went to the bars and drank, and maybe ran around with women.
Right.
And so we're not commending everything that soldier did. We're talking about his courage and bravery without commending all that he did.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Good point Steve brings up. So it does, you can obviously see the difference, especially with the examples that he brought up. So that is a good point. Because when you think about, like what you were talking about, someone that is a new Christian, you know, because they know enough to act upon that faith and belief and become a Christian, but there's still a lot of stuff that they need to learn. So that's a good point of considering it, Lord, looking at it that way.
Right.
Yes, sir.
Well, as an example, between faith and knowledge, it's in the opposite direction as well. There were a lot of people in Jericho that she knew, who knew all these things that she was talking about. She was the only one that acted on.
Yeah.
She was the only one that had the faith. They all had the knowledge, but didn't have the faith.
All right. Any other thoughts or comments? Okay. Appreciate your thoughts and your comments. There was something, well, kind of like what Todd was saying, there's some things you've heard in some of the other classes when it comes to this. There's, I have a little section on here, just things that we can know about Rahab. And it's just some stuff that you kind of pick up from some of what was in the verses. And which a lot of it's obvious. Number one, we've already talked about in verse one, it says she's a harlot. But in 13 and verse 18, both talk about her family. So she had family with her. She had father, mother, brother, sisters, and all that belonged, or all that who belonged to them. And we see that again in chapter 6. We'll see that when it talks about that they were spared in 6:23 and 25. But we see that she had her family there. We know that her house was built on the city wall. We see that. It brings that out in some of the verses. And, you know, when we started off, the way it was talking about where these guys, these two men, they lodged there at her place. So I don't know a whole lot of detail about it, because it calls it her house, but then it's also a place of lodging, is how it states it. So, I mean, is this some kind of hotel or something? You know, I don't know for sure. But we do see that they lodged there. Yes, sir, Ronnie?
Well, it also points out that God kept the spies promised. Because with the walls came tumbling down, her house didn't fill it up.
Right. But we see that this house, I don't know, like I said, I don't know if it's a hotel or however you want to consider, but it was a place of lodging. And these are just some things about her.
Greg, just another observation about Rahab that maybe we can, you know, invigorate our interest in meeting people where they're at in their life. Rahab apparently had come to this, you know, awareness and decision before the spies had got there. She had already seen and heard what had taken place, and she hadn't necessarily acted on it yet, as far as we know, but here came her opportunity. And who knows, just from us poor Christians today, who knows when we encounter people in whatever depths of, you know, sin or mess they're in, they may be harboring some thoughts about God, or, you know, they're prepared to act. We can help give them that that opportunity, give them the push they need to convert. And so Rahab is one for us to look at. Look at this harlot running a whatever it was, a hotel. But she had thoughts in her, you know, just generally humanity, they wrestle with what am I going to do about the big questions? God, my existence, purpose, you know God, you know, purposeless life. There, people wrestle with that. And some people are like, depending on where they're at, they're ready to do something about it. They just could use someone in their life to help them act on it. And that's what happened here. Finally, you know, the circumstance arose where she showed her faith. And we can use that as a, you know, an inspiration for us when we're encountering people in whatever walk in life they're at, that they may be having similar, you know, thoughts about God and being ready to move on it.
Right. Yeah, we never really know about those that we're about or around. They could be searching. That's definitely true. You know, I thought it was interesting, because you see when she had the men on the roof, that she had the flags laid out, and from what I'm understanding, I think some of the linen was woven from that. And then when it talks about when they're going to go into this, enter into this agreement, and the spies are talking to Rahab and saying, you know, how we're going to do this as far as how she's to mark the wall or her place there. And it says, well, we use this linen, you know, so this or not linen, this cord of scarlet. So to me, they're talking, they're discussing, and it's like, okay, I see this here, so we'll use this. So we'll tie this cord of scarlet thread in the window, the window that they were laid down out of. And so that would, to me, the way it was worded, that this cord would imply that it was something in the area when they were discussing some of these things. There's also a mention when you look into further chapters in 7, when it's talking about some of the spoils that were left over. It references this beautiful mantle from Shinar. And from what I was understanding when I was looking up this word, it's a term used for some type of garment. And so this was a garment, and Shinar is an ancient term for Babylon, according to Smith Dictionary. Now, that doesn't prove that it was hers, but when you consider some of the different things we're looking at with the flax and the thread and then this garment, some say that she might have been some kind of seamstress, and that doesn't really matter because it doesn't, like we've said before, it doesn't really say, you know, if she was or wasn't, and that's not necessarily important, but it's just some things that you just kind of notice when you're going through some of the verses, some of these things that are just kind of thrown in there. So I thought it was interesting. And let's turn over to Matthew 1:5. Kind of like what Miss Osteen was, what she had brought up. We see here at some point that she was the wife of Salmon, and with him the mother of Boaz. So, and we see this genealogy of Christ. So that's something else about her. So then once we get past all of this that was going on with her, and the two men are ready to return, they return back to Joshua, the son of Nun, and they relay to him all the things that had happened. And in verse 24, you know, they say to Joshua, "Surely the Lord has given all the land into our hands, and all the inhabitants of the land, moreover, have melted away before us." So they see, or you see this confidence, and that they know that the Lord is going to be with them, and that they're going to, we'll see here, they end up taking Jericho.